I'm Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word Podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word Podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.
Hi, this is John Cryer, and I am hosting a new 7-part true crime podcast called Lawyers, Guns, and Money. That'll challenge everything you think you know about U.S. covert operations and presidential misconduct. From Jack Bryan, the director of American PSYOP, comes the incredible true story of John Mattis, a newly sworn-in Miami public defender in the 1980s who has found himself completely in over his head.
I step off the plane, and there is a van with a couple guys with Uzis. And one of them in broken English said, "Welcome to Bogota, John."
Mattis's first felony defendant has been arrested for having a machine gun and tells Mattis a dangerous secret.
He was shipping arms into Central America on behalf of the CIA. As a first-time lawyer, I want to act like I know what I'm doing.
But with the help of a Colombian drug smuggler...
How much money the CIA raised by hitting up drug dealers?
A lot of money, millions of dollars.
An Alabama mercenary...
They were prepared to die to the last man. I saw this in them. I saw the fire in their eyes. And they made me their war chief.
And a newly elected senator, John Kerry.
We are looking at allegations of drug running, gun smuggling, conspiracy to commit murder and murder itself.
He'll fight to free his client.
The judge said, "Show me in a courtroom how we were at war."
Expose an illegal war being run by the White House.
I mean, I wanted him involved, but I didn't want to be on record as doing it.
And somehow stay alive in the process.
I just escaped a kidnapping by the CIA in Costa Rica.
This is Lawyers, Guns, and Money.
So you have a man in an Armani suit standing on the bow of a boat with a rocket launcher and says, "If I lose sight of you, I will launch. You will be vaporized."
Available everywhere starting October 29th, or get it ad-free and early starting October 22nd at lawyersgunsandmoney.supercast.com. There you'll find bonus episodes along with exclusive content. Subscribe now.
MSW Media.
News with swearing.
Hello, and welcome to the Daily Beans for Wednesday, April 24th, 2024. Today, David Pecker takes the stand again after a gag order contempt hearing for Trump in the Manhattan election interference hush money trial. Governor Gavin Newsom announces a plan for Arizonans to get abortions in California. The FTC has voted to ban non-compete clauses. A Florida restaurant owner is forced to fight for migrant workers. And a new Biden rule grants overtime pay for 4 million U.S. workers. I'm Allison Gill.
And I'm Dana Goldberg.
Hey, Dana. Happy Hump Day.
Happy Hump Day to you. And for those of you of the Jewish faith and that are celebrating Passover, I hope you are having a peaceful holiday. I think we're a couple days in. I'm admittedly not the best when it comes to observing the high holy days, but I do want to send just a very happy Passover to those who do celebrate. It's one of my favorites when it comes to family get-togethers, and the holiday truly have beautiful memories from when I was a kid. But unfortunately, I didn't get to a Seder this year. So just sending a lot of love.
Yeah, same here. I'm sorry I didn't get to make it to a Seder this year, but I know you're a very busy person, so it happens. I haven't seen a Christmas in a while, so...
See, it happens.
It does. Tomorrow, we have Supreme Court immunity arguments at 10 a.m. Eastern. I'll be listening and live tweeting. So follow me at Mueller, She Wrote. And of course, we'll cover it in depth on this weekend's Jack podcast. And I'll cover a Liz Cheney op-ed in the hot notes. There was a contempt hearing this morning for Donald Trump. No ruling yet. DA is asking for $1,000 per violation. And if you, like me, were wondering, like, why only $1,000? That's actually the maximum you can fine somebody for contempt.
Really? Oh, my God. Yeah.
I just learned that today. So I thought I'd share that with all of you because I was like, $1,000 is nothing. Because I'm thinking he's just like, Trump is seeing it as a, well, I'll just, it's only costing me $1,000 a pop. So I'll just keep interfering with the jurors and the witnesses.
However, comma, it is interfering with the judge's respect for his lawyers because his jackass of a lawyer was like, he's doing the best he can to not make Truth Social posts. And so we'd like you to take that into consideration. And the judge in front of the jury was like, you're pushing it.
You're losing all credibility.
Yeah.
He said, which is
that's a big fucking statement.
Not something you hear very often. And they've been talking about that a lot on MSNBC. But Dana, this is pretty cool. ABC is reporting that the U.S. Secret Service is now holding meetings and starting planning for what to do if Trump were to be held in contempt and would have to go to jail. So they're trying to figure it out now. That's according to officials familiar with the situation. As we know, the judge Tuesday reserved decision on the matter after contentious arguments. He said, we're not yet seeking, well, this is what the DA said, we're not yet seeking incarceratory penalty, but the defendant seems to be angling for that. Officials don't necessarily believe the judge would put Trump in a holding cell in the courthouse, but they're planning for it just in case. That's what the officials said. And you know he's going to keep violating this order, even if he gets hit with fines. So time to plan. And I am wondering why they haven't been planning on this in case there's a conviction. I feel like they should have been having meetings on what to do if Trump gets sentenced to jail for a while now.
That is a fair thing. I think part of it is they're definitely sure he's going to violate his gag order. They're not definitely sure he's going to get convicted. So I think that goes into that. I would like to think he is, but I think they're planning for the immediate, you know,
future. Yeah,
that we know this is going to happen. And
man,
he did.
I worked for the government. We plan for shit like a decade in advance.
That's true.
Still haven't even started talking about what. And, you know, I talked to a couple people, including John Dean, about this, who was incarcerated after Watergate. They put him in a safe house on a military base instead of putting him in prison to solve that problem. So we might see something like that, but probably not in contempt, not in the contempt case. So we'll let you know exactly how the judge rules when that comes out. All right. We have a lot to get to today. I have a special story in the B block about a Miami Republican and DeSantis supporter who had to fire 19 of his employees because they weren't legal. And they didn't have, you know, the correct documentation to be working. And now all of a sudden he's flipped and he's trying to fight for migrant workers, but he's doing it in a really Republican way. And it's fascinating to see them have to twist themselves into knots to protect their bottom line. They don't care about really the people.
Right.
They care about their money. But, you know, some of these workers had been working for this guy for decades, so maybe it was a little bit personal, but they tend not to, like yesterday when we talked about how Speaker Johnson didn't really think about, you know, Putin and Ukraine until his son was accepted at the Naval Academy, it doesn't really hit him upside the head until it happens to them. So
that's,
I have that story in the B block, and then of course we'll cover the good news. But first, let's hit the hot notes. Hot notes. All right, first up, and this is from Liz Cheney. And she's writing an opinion piece for the New York Times. And she says, on Thursday, the U.S. Supreme Court will hear Donald Trump's arguments that he is immune from prosecution for his efforts to steal the 2020 presidential election. It's likely that all or nearly all of the justices will agree that a former president who attempted to seize power and remain in office illegally can be prosecuted. I suspect that some justices may also wish to clarify whether doctrines of presidential immunity might apply in other contexts. For example, to a president's actions as commander-in-chief during a time of war. But the justices should also recognize the profoundly negative impact they may have if the court does not resolve these issues quickly and decisively. If delay prevents this Trump case from being tried this year, the public may never hear critical and historic evidence developed before the grand jury, and our system may never hold the man most responsible for January 6th to account. The January 6th House Select Committee's hearings and final report in 2022 relied on testimony given by dozens of Republicans, including many who worked closely with Trump in the White House, in his Justice Department, and on his 2020 presidential campaign. The special counsel Jack Smith's election-related indictment of Trump relies on many of the same firsthand witnesses. Although the special counsel reached a number of the same conclusions as the Select Committee, the indictment is predicated on a separate and independent investigation. Evidence was developed and presented to a grand jury sitting in D.C. The indictment and public reporting suggest that the special counsel was able to obtain key evidence that our committee did not have. For example, it appears that the grand jury received evidence from witnesses such as Mark Meadows, a former Trump chief of staff, and Dan Scavino, a former Trump aide, both of whom refused to testify in our investigation. Public reporting also suggests that members of Trump's Office of White House Counsel and other White House aides testified in full without any limitations based on executive privilege, as did Vice President Mike Pence and his counsel. The special counsel's indictment lays out that Trump detailed a plan to overturn the 2020 election, including the corrupt use of fraudulent slates of electors in several states. According to the indictment, senior advisors in the White House, Justice Department, and elsewhere repeatedly warned that Trump's claims of election fraud were false and that his plans for January 6th were illegal. Trump chose to ignore those warnings. Remember what the White House lawyer Eric Hirschman told Mr. Trump's alleged co-conspirator John Eastman on January 7th. Get a great fucking criminal defense lawyer. You're going to need it. There's little doubt that Mr. Trump's closest advisors also gave the federal grand jury minute-to-minute accounts of his malicious conduct on January 6th, describing how they repeatedly begged for the president to instruct the violent rioters to leave our Capitol, and how Trump refused for several hours to do so as he watched the attack on television. This historic testimony about a former president's conduct is likely to remain secret until the special counsel presents his case at trial. As a criminal defendant, Trump has long had access to federal grand jury material relating to his January 6th indictment and to all the testimony obtained by our select committee. He knows what all these witnesses have said under oath and understands the risks he faces at trial. That's why he's doing everything possible to try to delay his January 6th federal criminal trial until after the election. If the trial is delayed past this fall and Trump wins re-election, he will surely fire the special counsel, order his Justice Department to drop all January 6th cases, and try to prevent key grand jury testimony from ever seeing the light of day. I know how Mr. Trump's delay tactics work. Our committees had to spend months litigating his privilege claims in Trump v. Thompson, for example, before we could gain access to White House records. Court records and public reporting suggest the special counsel also invested considerable time defeating Trump's claims of executive privilege, which were aimed at preventing key evidence from reaching the grand jury. All of this evidence should be presented in open court so that the public can fully assess what Trump did on January 6th and what a man capable of that type of depravity could do again if handed the awesome power of the presidency. Earlier this year, a federal appeals court took less than a month after oral arguments to issue its lengthy opinion on immunity. History shows that the Supreme Court can act just as quickly when necessary, and the court should fashion its decision in a way that does not lead to further time-consuming appeals on presidential immunity. It cannot be that a president of the United States can attempt to steal an election and seize power, but our justice system is incapable of bringing him to trial before the next election 4 years later. Mr. Trump believes he can threaten and intimidate judges and their families, assert baseless legal defenses, and thereby avoid accountability altogether. Through this conduct, he seeks to break our institutions. If Mr. Trump's tactics prevent his January 6th trial from proceeding in the ordinary course, he will also have succeeded in concealing critical evidence from the American people, evidence demonstrating his disregard for the rule of law, his cruelty on January 6th, and the deep flaws in character that make him unfit to serve as president. The Supreme Court should understand this reality and conclude without delay that no immunity applies here.
You know, I know that she is the devil we know, but every once in a while, and I will give credit where it's due, I appreciate Liz Cheney's words. I think they're right on target here.
Yeah, I felt the same way when she finally showed up on Rachel Maddow's show, and yeah. Maddow was like, this is somebody I never thought I would talk to. This is somebody I have been kind of a political enemy of for my whole working life. especially with her treatment of the LGBTQ plus community, et cetera. But today we need to talk about something, the one thing, probably the only thing that we agree on.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said. And of course, well said, Rachel Maddow. This one's from another Rachel. This is Rachel Bluth at Politico. Governor Gavin Newsom is set to propose legislation to make it easier for Arizonans to seek abortions in his neighboring state of California. The proposal would offer Arizona abortion providers an expedited way to get licensed in California to perform the procedure for their patients. Newsom's office told Politico ahead of the governor's announcement on MSNBC's Inside with Jen Psaki airing Sunday. Newsom's move comes in direct response to Arizona Supreme Court's recent decision to uphold an 1864 ban on abortion in that state, and he plans to present the bill as an emergency measure this week with the California Legislative Women's Caucus. California is anticipating a wave of more patients to arrive from Arizona and would need help from doctors from that state to treat them. Newsom said he hopes to have the law in place by May 1st. Quote, Arizona AG Chris Mayes identified a need to expedite the ability for Arizona abortion providers to continue to provide care to Arizonans as a way to support patients in their state seeking abortion care in California. This is from a Newsom spokesperson, Brandon Richards. That's what he told Politico in a statement. And he went on to say, we are responding to this call and we have more details to share in the coming days. Newsom hopes it would take as little as 5 to 10 days for Arizona providers to be approved in California if his bill passes. The governor's office did not provide further details on the legislation, including which legislator would introduce it or how he expects it to get through the state legislature before lawmakers take a recess for the summer. State policymakers have been preparing for an influx of patients from other parts of the country coming to California for abortions. This has been since the U.S. Supreme Court overturned national right to abortion in 2022. California's legislature passed dozens of laws aimed at expanding access to abortions in 22 and 2023, including enhanced privacy and legal protections for both patients and doctors, and more robust insurance coverage for the procedure. Newsom also pledged $200 million to go toward reproductive health care, allocating funds for security at clinics, training new providers, and assistance for people who need to travel for their appointments. But the state has also struggled to build new clinics and train new providers. The governor's office believes allowing doctors from Arizona to treat patients across the border, well, it could ease that strain. And I am proud to have him as my governor. I think this is a great move. It will save women's lives and childbearing people. And I'm just, every time he does this, he gets so much shit for it. And I still couldn't be more proud that he's actually doing this. This is important.
Yeah, I think it's great. I'm really interested on the logistics, like of the doctors that would be licensed in less than a week.
Yeah.
Where would they perform these abortions for Arizonans? Like, how would it work? I'm really interested to see that in the coming days. And we'll share it with you when we know. Next up, from Daniel Weissner at Reuters. The administration of U.S. President Joe Biden on Tuesday unveiled a rule extending mandatory overtime pay to an estimated 4 million salaried workers, going even further than an Obama-era rule that was struck down in court. The U.S. Department of Labor rule will require employers to pay overtime premiums to workers who earn a salary of less than $1,128 a week, which is about $58,000, $59,000 a year, when they work more than 40 hours a week. The current salary threshold is only $35,500 per year, and it was set by the Trump administration in a 2020 rule that worker advocates and many Democrats have said didn't go far enough. The rule does not affect overtime requirements for workers who are paid by the hour. Julie Hsu, the acting Secretary of Labor and Biden's nominee to fill the post permanently, said in a statement that the rule ensures that workers either earn more money or are paid the same work for fewer hours. Too often, she said, lower-paid salaried workers are doing the same job as their hourly counterparts, but are spending more time away from their families for no additional pay. So under this rule, the threshold for salary will increase to about $44,000 on July 1st and almost $59,000 on January 1st, 2025. And then starting in 2027, the threshold will automatically increase every 3 years to reflect changes in average earnings. U.S. wage law requires employers to pay eligible workers 1.5 times their regular rate of pay when they work more than 40 hours in a week. But salaried workers who earn above the salary threshold may still be eligible for overtime pay if they do not primarily perform management-related duties. Workers are generally automatically exempt if they earn a salary of more than $107,000. And the new rule will raise that cutoff to about $151,000. That's amazing. Several states, including California and New York, have salary thresholds for determining overtime eligibility that are higher than the current federal standard. The Labor Department in 2016 doubled the salary threshold to about $47,000. A federal judge in Texas the following year said that was too high. And it was so high it could sweep in some management workers who are exempt from overtime pay protections. And that federal judge in Texas struck it down. The new rule is likely to face legal challenges, arguing that, like the Obama administration rule, violates federal wage law by including many lower paid supervisors and professionals who typically would not be eligible for overtime. Meanwhile, unions, worker advocacy groups, and many Democrats support the rule. The AFL-CIO, the country's largest labor federation, said in a statement they praised the Biden administration's move for restoring overtime protections that it said had been gutted by the Trump administration.
Thanks so much, AG. And last in this segment, it's from Taylor Giorno at The Hill. The Federal Trade Commission, or the FTC, voted 3-2 on Tuesday to ban non-compete agreements that prevent tens of millions of employees from working for competitors or starting a competing business after they leave a job. From fast food workers all the way up to CEOs, the FTC estimates 18% of the U.S. workforce is covered by non-compete agreements. That's about 30 million people.
Wow.
The final rule would ban new non-compete agreements for all workers and require companies to let current and past employees know they won't enforce them. Companies will also have to throw out existing non-compete agreements for most employees, although in a change from the original proposal, the agreements may remain in effect for senior executives. Quote, "It's so profoundly unfree and unfair for people to be stuck in jobs they want to leave, not because they lack better alternatives, but because non-competes preclude another firm from fairly competing for their labor, requiring workers instead to leave their industries or their homes to make ends." Now, this is from the FTC Commissioner Rebecca Slaughter, happens to be a Democrat. She said that in prepared remarks. The new rule is slated to go into effect in 120 days after it's published in the Federal Register. But its future is uncertain, as pro-business groups opposing the rule, they're expected to take legal action to block its implementation. Business groups say non-compete agreements are critical for protecting proprietary information and intellectual property, although the rule would not ban other methods for protecting that information, including non-disclosure and confidentiality agreements. They also question the agency's authority to issue the blanket retroactive ban. Now, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the largest pro-business lobbying group in the country, has said it will sue to block the rule. So we're going to see what happens with that, but they are trying to do it.
Yeah, and I imagine that this Supreme Court, which hates workers and loves the rich people, will probably block this rule. All right, I have that story about the Florida restaurant owner who is a DeSantis supporter and a lifelong Republican who is now forced to rethink Republican immigration policy. We'll be right back with that, along with the good news after this quick break. Stick around. We'll be right back.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. So this is a fascinating story. If you want to hear, Republicans have to tie themselves into knots over reconciling their views on immigrants with their money, their bottom line. This story is by Mary Ellen Klass at the Miami Herald, and I highly recommend you subscribe to their online paper. I get invaluable news stories from their publication. So here's how it goes. It says, Richard Gonsmart, the fourth generation owner of the iconic Columbia restaurant chain based in Tampa, Florida, says it's time for politicians to start listening on immigration. When federal immigration authorities arrived at his Sand Key restaurant in Clearwater in 2021 to find outdated and non-compliant work documents for 19 of his employees, he was forced to fire them all, including 7 people who had worked with his family for decades. Quote, with 2,000 employees, it becomes very difficult to monitor it. That's what he said in an interview. We think they're legal, but when we had to check, we found 7 people who have been with me for 30 years, paying taxes, had children, grandchildren, and were required to terminate them. Now, immigration and customs enforcement officials in Tampa would not comment on the case, and Gonsmart said he was still negotiating a resolution to the conflict. But the incident underscores the double scrutiny many businesses face as the new state law layers new immigration enforcement policies to existing federal rules in a way that is exacerbating worker shortages. It's a scenario that's playing out across Florida with restaurants, construction companies, and farms searching for workers as the political rhetoric over immigration is clanging up against a tight labor market and an expanding population. Gone Smart is the great-grandson of Casimiro Hernandez Sr., the founder of the historic Ybor City restaurant that is the chain's anchor. Since its opening in 1905, the company has treated employees as part of the restaurant family, paying them above market wages and benefits. During the pandemic, when the restaurant closed for 2 months, the company continued paying wages, 401k retirement plans, medical insurance, and providing 9,000 meals a week to employees and their families. Gonsmark said he now wants stronger protections for migrants who have been here for years. Quote, a family business sometimes has to absorb a little bit of the burden and loss in order to provide for the people that make our business possible and a success. Now, while the company rebounded from COVID-19, exceeding sales from even its best year, he said it now finds itself in the throes of a statewide labor shortage that he believes was made worse by the implementation of Florida's new immigration law. Quote, I'm very proud of Governor DeSantis and everything he's done. I really am. That's what he said. He's a lifelong Republican. It gave me confidence, and that's why so many people are moving here. But my concern is the governor putting in a law that says those who have an expired driver's license can't renew it because they're no longer legal. They cannot work. Their papers are no longer legal. While much of the focus on Florida's new immigration law has been on its impact on agriculture and construction, the state's pivotal restaurant and lodging industry has drawn less attention, but the repercussions have been profound. Florida's new law orders private businesses with more than 25 workers to use the E-Verify platform to check their employees' eligibility to work in the U.S. It makes it a felony to transport into the state people who enter the country illegally, and it compels hospitals who take Medicaid to ask a patient's immigration status. Gonsmart said that many of his employees were hired at a time when the state didn't require companies to obtain documents showing proof of eligibility to work. But under Florida's new law, state and local law enforcement officials are authorized to enforce federal immigration laws. Even before the state law took effect on July 1st, he said many people with papers did not renew them because of the concern that the government was going to send them back. As DeSantis increased his political focus on illegal immigration in Florida, federal authorities were taking interest in Gonsmart, head of the 1905 Family Restaurants, the new name for the former Columbia Restaurant Group. Owners of the Columbia restaurants, Ulele, Goody Goody Burgers, Casa Santo Stefano, Cha Cha Coconuts, and Cafe Con Leche, Ybor City. Under federal law, ICE officials may obtain a warrant to inspect an employer's documents, either through E-Verify or I-9 forms, the documents which are used to determine an employee's identity and eligibility to work. Many of his employees, especially those working in the kitchens in the back of the house, are fathers, sons, and brothers. And so when immigration officials told him the I-9 forms of most of his loyal employees were not in compliance and he would have to fire them, he resisted. Quote, I told them I wouldn't let them go, and they threatened to arrest me. I said, that's a good idea. Why don't you come and arrest me? But let me know when so I can have cameras here. Then they sent me a $500,000 fine, and I let them go. Homeland Security investigation spokesperson said the agency wouldn't comment on ongoing pending investigations and pointed to a voluntary program run by the agency that helps employers identify fraudulent documents supplied by their employees. Meanwhile, Gonsmart said the incident almost put us out of business. And while customer demand has rebounded from the pandemic, the inability to find enough new staff has forced him to suspend his catering services and reduce restaurant hours. Carol Dover, president and CEO of the more than 10,000-member Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association, said that Gonsmart is not alone. Hotels are not opening all rooms because they don't have enough housekeepers. Restaurants that used to be open for breakfast, lunch, and dinner are now open for just lunch and dinner. And existing staff puts in extra hours. Quote, everybody's having to get creative with their thinking. The group holds its annual summit in Fort Lauderdale starting Tuesday. John Horn, CEO of Anna Maria Oyster Bar, and chair of the board of the Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association, held an informal poll Friday at a gathering of 85 hotel and restaurant members of the Suncoast chapter of the FRLA, and he said none of them, quote, had or heard of an ICE audit, nor did they want to. But he said the chilling effect of anti-immigration sentiment and the effect it's had on Florida workforce is real, Quote, we have people that have been in our state for 20 plus years that are scared, he said. They don't know what to do because the emotion is that ICE is around the corner. Our state has just become a toxic place in that feeling of wanting to get rid of all the illegals. Horn predicts that when winter tourism and travel season begins and employers can't find employees who can pass the E-Verify screening, quote, it could cause a huge problem, unquote. He said the association is calling for a pathway to help those people who've paid their taxes, had their Social Security withheld, and become contributing members of our community. So, immigrants. On Tuesday, more than 30 Florida public officials asked President Joe Biden in a letter to expand immigration protections for migrants in the U.S. who are without pathways to permanent immigration or whose protections from deportations are at risk. Horn and Dover agree the border needs to be closed to tamp down on the rising incidence of gangs smuggling in fentanyl and other drugs and criminals engaging in human trafficking, but the answer involves addressing the need for workers now with a guest worker or essential worker program. Quote, we need our immigrants to work, Dover said, but the solution is not amnesty for them, rather a system that allows them to be here as temporary workers, without voting rights and without citizenship, but an opportunity to obtain a driver's license and a promise to stay 3 to 5 years. Oh, and they cannot have a criminal record, she said, but if they want to go to work and help raise their family, they need to be able to do that, come out of hiding and pay taxes. We're built on a land of migrants, Horn said, and we need help. I don't understand why not amnesty. Elizabeth Ricci, Tallahassee-based immigration lawyer with the law firm Rombana and Ricci, said she's getting calls from worried employers who want to help the immigrant employees navigate the immigration system, but the rules are so onerous it can take up to 5 years for someone to establish permanent residency. Yeah, that's the problem. We need to have a path to citizenship, a fast, easy path to citizenship. Quote, employers are seeing that their workforce is scared, she said. A lot of them have told me their workers are leaving for other states. They try to help those who have not left get legalized, but it's not a quick fix. That's Julia Maskvicker, a Rollins College political science professor who studies labor and immigration trends, and said that many of the policies advanced by DeSantis and lawmakers, including SB 1718, quote, have been designed with complete disregard for its economic consequences. Florida's labor shortage is having an impact on the fact that Florida has the most stubborn inflation rate in the nation. If agricultural fields are empty now, that tomato at Publix is going to be 4 times more expensive. It's just a ripple effect. It's amazing how when it impacts their bottom line, it's suddenly an issue. Now, GONSMART wants policymakers to do more, listening to the people making the payrolls, not the immigrants. He wants politicians to listen to the people making the payrolls. Quote, I just think politicians are listening too much to the far left or the far right, and it's people in the middle that care about people, he said. Look at all our staff over 118 years. It's the story of all these hardworking immigrants that suffered, struggled, just as they are today, trying to find their children that opportunity to get an education, to be a valuable resident, a citizen of the country. We can't let everyone in, he adds, but we have to look to help those who are here and who have been law-abiding to realize the dream. Okay, that is how Republican business owner, restaurateur, GONSMART is dealing with these draconian, racist Florida immigration laws. It's a fascinating look, I think, to think about these people saying, well, now my bottom line is in jeopardy. Our tourism is in jeopardy. Not the lives of the immigrants. They don't seem too worried about them. Anyway, we need some good news after that, so stick around. We'll be right back. Everybody, welcome back. It's time for the good news.
Who likes good news, everyone? Then good news, everyone.
Good news, good news. And if you have any good news, confessions, corrections, you want to play What the Fark is in Your Ark, send us a photo of an animal or a drawing of one. We'll just try to guess something about it. This started out, in case you're new with the beans, it started out as What the Mutt, where you send us a photo of your adopted shelter puppy, and we tried to guess what kind of breeds made up that dog. And it has expanded into quite the menagerie of different animals and different guessing games. So just send in a photo of your favorite animal, your pick, your pet for Pod Pet Tax. If you don't have a Pod Pet, you can pay your Pod Pet Tax by sending us an adoptable pet in your area. And we'll see if we can help find them a forever home. And anything else, your photos of your happy places, holiday photos. I love Halloween and like Santa Claus lap photos, photos of your Seder. We would love to see all those holiday pictures. What else do we love? We love baby photos.
Love the baby photos.
Frog orgies, pictures of frog orgies. And that where that comes from, New Beans listeners, I grew up in Ohio on a lake. And I used to collect tadpoles and they would turn into a bunch of frogs. And we would literally have like buckets of frogs. And I loved it. It was adorable and amazing. So send those to us. And then, you know, thesis titles, dissertation titles, any program enacted by a Democratic president that has helped you personally, want to hear that story, especially your student debt relief stories. Send those to us. And anything really at all that you want to give a shout out to yourself, a loved one, your kids, your parents, your spouse, your partner, a small business in your area, whatever you want to send to us, send it to us at dailybeanspod.com and click on contact. All right. First up from Kimberly, pronouns she and her. Hello, ladies of the legume. I have some amazing good news. My sister moved to Middle Tennessee 15 years ago for a teaching job. She just got a job in our hometown and she's moving back. Our daughters will be going to the same school and we are all so excited. Awesome. My Pod Pet Tax is my sweet boy, Jax, begging for a snack and relaxing on a beanbag in our family room.
I love Jax.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so this looks like he's got some...
Look at the second picture.
Like, they're not asking us to guess, but this looks like a multi-poo schnauzer what this looks like.
I would agree with everything that just came out of your mouth.
Adorable. That photo, oh, my God. He's a gentleman. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Looks like there's also a tiny Yorkie in there. That little nose snoot, little floof. I don't know. Either way, cue the button. This one's from Jenny, pronouns she and her. Hello, ladies of the legume. I've been an avid listener to the Daily Beans for about 6 months now. In recognition of National Lesbian Visibility Week, I want to send a shout out to my favorite lesbian, my daughter. Not yet 22 years old. She works full-time at a legal office, and she's already halfway through her master's program at Johns Hopkins. Her degree is environmental science and policy, and she is overall an incredible person. I'm so proud of her hard work, her joy in life, and her passion to change the world. I also want to send a shout-out to another amazing lesbian, DG. Whoop, whoop. Thank you for all you do for the LGBTQ+ community. For my Pod Tax, our family had to say goodbye to both our sweet dog and our sassy kitty within 3 months of each other last year. Inspired by each day's good news, I decided to be more intentional in finding my own daily good news. I began volunteering at an Atlanta area animal rescue 3 afternoons a week, as well as fostering cats who were awaiting their forever home. I have met so many wonderful, generous, joyful people through this volunteer work, and two of my foster cats have already found their forever homes.
Yay.
I'm including a photo of my current foster. This is Goose. He doesn't make good first impressions with potential families because he finds the shelter environment so stressful. Mm. However, he is the most incredibly smart, insanely curious, and playful cat I've ever met. He even loves to play fetch. I would love for him to find a forever family he deserves. Fur Kids Animal Rescue will even provide transfertation outside the state of Georgia. Thank you to the Beans community, and I encourage everyone to find a little good news in your own lives each day. What a great final thought that I may steal one day. There's a link to Adopt Goose, by the way, in our show notes. So if you're interested in this amazing kitty who also plays fetch, who wouldn't want one? We're going to make sure you have that information.
Yes, cats who play fetch are awesome. That means they're awfully nice, very snuggly. Usually you can pet their bellies. I'm not sure if this is a trap, but he is adorable. And I love that. Okay, furkids.org for that. Thank you, Jenny. Next up from Alice, pronouns she and her, just with each other of the beans. Thinking about the listener who didn't think the LGBTQ+ news pertained to her reminded me of a conversation I had years ago with a coworker who shared an office with me. When she found out I was part of the alphabet mafia, she said, "I don't understand. What do two women do?" Not hostile, just perplexed. My response? We do what everyone else does. We just do it with each other. When she still seemed confused, I clarified. You know, we go to work, we pay our bills, we feed and walk the dogs, we buy groceries, we cook dinner, we do the dishes, we take out the trash, we mow the lawn, same stuff everyone else does. We just do it with each other.
Nice.
It's probably not the answer she was looking for, but it emphasized our similarities. And that was the important thing. We're all learning. My niece's children are non-binary, and that was new to me. I think there has always been much more variety than we've chosen to recognize. But still, we do the same things, just with different people. And maybe different clothes and hairstyles and pronouns. Life would be awfully boring if we were all the same. And thanks to the Beans community for holding space for all our beautiful diversity.
Nice.
Wow. Shout out to a couple of my favorite TikTok creators for doing likewise. See Ya Later, S-E-A, See Ya Later, creator of Hell's Bells, which now follows the stories of those who staff the help desk, that's H-E-L-L-P desk, spelling intended, where the first two levels of hell are the therapy levels, and angels can be LGBTQ+, and demons can be feminists. And C.M. Alongi, that's C period M period A-L-O-N-G-I, whose coffee latte, that's C-A-F-A-E, L-A-T-T-E, I think cafe, meaning like fairy, cafe latte comes with pronouns and buttons, where the owner, Bob, pronouns she and her, often bespells the more obnoxious patrons to be silent until they learn to appreciate those they have bullied, or to experience the symptoms of someone else until they learn to be less critical of the coping methods of others. My pod pet, Carrie Lynn, is currently suffering the confusion of an upside-down schedule since this week I'm doing jury duty during the day, picture creature of the night hissing and recoiling in horror from daylight, instead of working the night shift at the hospital. We're both confused and befuddled. Next week, we'll be back to our usual schedule. Thanks to all the Beans, coffee, lima, navy, jelly, etc., for something to listen to while waiting for the case. Appreciate you all. Oh, look at this good dog.
That was awesome.
Yeah, what a great submission. Thanks, Alice.
Absolutely. This one's from Dr. DG, pronouns she and her. Dearest AG and DG, not a doctor. I added that. Greetings from the UK. You and your podcast have changed my life. I began tuning in during the kitchen table days at a time when I felt utterly adrift. As a university lecturer specializing in Mexican culture, the tumultuous convergence of Trump and Brexit wreaked havoc on my career prospects. This is as good time as any for the PhD thesis tags. Mine was called Mediating Mexican Otherness, Subalternity in Maya Godid's Socially Engaged Photo Documentaries. Wow. And it came out as a book in 2019. I'm still hugely proud of it. You should be.
Nice.
During those kitchen table days, my academic trajectory was stagnant, my expertise dismissed by those who failed to grasp the depth and richness of the Mexican culture. I felt marginalized and disempowered by the patriarchal structures alive and kicking in my professional sphere. I also had two small kids at the time and was determined to be able to provide for them and show them that every challenge or failure is also an opportunity. Your words, initially weekly and then daily, made me realize that I had to make a change. Your strength in holding powerful men accountable, your courage in confronting personal trauma of rape. These resonated deeply with my own journey. Having endured domestic violence as a child and years of sexual abuse, my healing process had given me a resilience I never knew I had. I am unbreakable. Your clear admiration for the legal profession inspired me to chart a new professional course. Just before the pandemic, I started law school and began working as a paralegal, earning my stripes as a qualified lawyer last year. I love my new career. I spend my days dictating terms to men, reshaping the world in the process. It's not just a feminist ego trip, though. I'm also dedicated to dismantling barriers for young women from marginalized backgrounds, helping them break into the legal profession. I even managed to win an award for my education outreach work. I love nurturing women's ambitions and giving them the confidence to do exactly what they want to do. Today, April 24th, is my 40th birthday. Happy, happy birthday. And as a personal tribute, I need to thank you both for empowering me to seize control of my destiny, to embrace my power. Witnessing your unwavering determination to carve out your place in the world, to build an independent media network fueled by authenticity and resilience fills me with such inspiration and joy. The beautiful synergy between you and the remarkable DG warms my heart. DG, your work with HRC is truly amazing. A small correction, John Fugelsang, your charisma and mane are undeniable, but it's Dr. Gill, not Miss Gill. I'll spare you the pet tax this time. My children have taken care for stick insects lately. However, I've attached a photo of my little cherubs when they were babies, especially for Dana. You and your love matter more than you know. I listen to every single episode, you legends. All my love. Dr. DG, my goodness, thank you for the gift you just gave us and all of the listeners. I'm so impressed with your journey and all of the paying it forward you already are doing and plan to do with this new career of yours. Happy 40th. And I promise you, and I know some people may not feel this way, but things get a lot more real and in the best fucking way after you turn 40. Knowing who you are, knowing what you want to do with your life in this world, who you want to be, who you want to surround yourself, who you want to give your time to. This is a beautiful time in your life, and it sounds like you are already paving the way to make it an extraordinary decade. So welcome.
Oh, that I was getting pretty emotional too with that one. It's really, really incredible when you get to a point where you go from being someone who received help to someone who helps other people.
Yeah.
I remember when retired Brigadier General Allison Hickey, who was at the Veterans Benefits Administration as an undersecretary at the VA, saw the documentary I was in about military sexual trauma. And she had reached out to us to find out how we were doing. And I said, you know, they keep denying my claim. They can't find a marker, because the way I deal with PTSD is I overachieve.
Uh-huh.
I dive into my work, so my grades didn't get bad. I didn't act out in ways that some folks do.
Right.
So they said, well, we don't have any markers in your file that this happened. And she helped find a marker. I actually did go and seek medical care and sent that to the VA, and then I got my compensation and pension exam, and my claim was adjudicated, and they finally acknowledged what had happened to me. And at the end of her email, when I reached out to thank her, her email signature said, "You are my starfish." And I was like, "What is that?" I couldn't, like, I had to ask her, like, "What do you mean you're my starfish?"
Yeah.
And she says, "Oh," and she sent me this picture of like one of those 90s inspirational posters. It is a little story about a little girl on a beach, and she's throwing starfish back into the ocean. And a cynical old man comes up to her and says, "What are you doing?" And she's like, I'm saving these starfish. And he's like, "But look, there's millions, and this beach is miles long. You'll never make a difference for all of them." And she reached down and picked up a starfish and threw it in the ocean. And she said, "Yeah, but I made a difference for that one." And so that was always what General Hickey said to people: "You are my starfish." She's just helping people one at a time as best she can. And when I went to look that up when I was writing my book recently, Dana, I wanted to find the original story, like where that came from. And it came from this book called The Unexpected Universe. And it was really funny because I got a notification from Alexa that says, "Allison, The Unexpected Universe has arrived."
That's
thanks. But the actual original story is called The Star Thrower, and it's about how that cynical old man actually goes, "Huh, you might have a point there," and starts throwing starfish, and then realizes the rewards of it, and the cynic becomes the star thrower.
Oh.
And then I thought about how I went from being a starfish to being a star thrower, with being cynical in between there for quite a while. And I thought there was a lot of importance that part of the story was missing in that evolution. And what she's described here in this story about, you know, going from somebody who was receiving help to now somebody who mentors people and breaks down barriers for women is just absolutely fantastic and gorgeous. And I know that was the longest final thought in the history of the world, and I apologize for taking up so much time telling it. But thank you so much for that submission. It really means a lot to me.
That's awesome. I have a little good news of my own that I can say now. It was a list they were trying to keep quiet. Curve Magazine, who's been one of the nation's longest running lesbian magazines in the country, they released their Curve Power List for 2024. And it's 50 women, LGBTQ, non-binary lesbians that identify as lesbians that are making a difference in the world. And I'm happy to say that I was nominated for that list and made it into it. And the list is, it's pretty extraordinary. Brittany Griner, you know, our dear Rachel Maddow, Jodie Foster, Brandi Carlile, Wanda Sykes, among others, Megan Rapinoe, Sue Bird, Sarah Paulson, my dear friend Kelly Robinson, who's HRC president, and Amani Gordon, who runs the National Center for Lesbian Rights. So I'm honored to be on that list, and it just feels good to be amongst such incredible people that are making a difference in this world. So I just wanted to let you all know that's my good news for the week.
Very well deserved, my incredible friend.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back in your ears tomorrow. Until then, please take care of yourselves, take care of each other, take care of the planet, take care of your family, take care of your mental health. Vote blue over Q.
And please take everyone you know with you.
I've been AG.
And I've been DG.
And them's the Beans. The Daily Beans is written and executive produced by Allison Gill, with additional research and reporting by Dana Goldberg. Sound design and editing is by Desiree McFarlane, with art and web design by Joelle Reeder with Moxie Design Studios. Music for The Daily Beans is written and performed by They Might Be Giants, and the show is a proud member of the MSW Media Network, a collection of creator-owned podcasts dedicated to news, politics, and justice. For more information, please visit mswmedia.com. MSW Media.
Hi, this is John Cryer, and I am hosting a new 7-part true crime podcast called Lawyers, Guns, and Money that'll challenge everything you think you know about U.S. covert operations and presidential misconduct. From Jack Bryan, the director of American PSYOP, comes the incredible true story of John Mattis, a newly sworn-in Miami public defender in the 1980s who has found himself completely in over his head.
I step off the plane, and there is a van with a couple guys with Uzis. And one of them in broken English said, "Welcome to Bogota, John."
Mattis's first felony defendant has been arrested for having a machine gun and tells Mattis a dangerous secret.
He was shipping arms into Central America on behalf of the CIA. As a first-time lawyer, I want to act like I know what I'm doing.
But with the help of a Colombian drug smuggler...
How much money the CIA raised by hitting up drug dealers?
A lot of money, millions of dollars.
An Alabama mercenary...
They were prepared to die to the last man. I saw this in them. I saw the fire in their eyes. And they made me their war chief.
And a newly elected senator, John Kerry.
We are looking at allegations of drug running, gun smuggling, conspiracy to commit murder and murder itself.
He'll fight to free his client.
The judge said, "Show me in a courtroom how we were at war."
Expose an illegal war being run by the White House.
I mean, I wanted him involved, but I didn't want to be on record as doing it.
And somehow stay alive in the process.
I just escaped a kidnapping by the CIA in Costa Rica.
This is Lawyers, Guns, and Money.
So you have a man in an Armani suit standing on the bow of a boat with a rocket launcher and says, "If I lose sight of you, I will launch. You will be vaporized."
Available everywhere starting October 29th, or get it ad-free and early starting October 22nd at lawyersgunsandmoney.supercast.com. There you'll find bonus episodes along with exclusive content. Subscribe now.